Now, it's time for another edition of
Cannonball!
The Cannons Blue Jackets Roundtable.
Here's Nash stepping in by one. Score! Cracked
it! Here's your host, Dan P.
What's up, everybody? It's Dan P. here. I know it has been a while since we have last graced you with a podcast. You know, I'd like to say it's that, you know, the team's been so bad, haven't been real interested, but in all honesty, we've been quite a busy bunch. As you probably remember, my wife and I had a baby, and Mr. Wagner is now joining the ranks of the engaged and also changed jobs, and Mr. McLean is on my heels here and about to have a baby himself. And of course, Andy is also doing a bunch of freelance work, so that's our excuse, and we're going to stick to that. But at any rate, I'm joined here with Mike McLean and Matt Wagner. Guys, how you doing?
Not too bad.
Wow. Excellent. So we'll start off here with some big news. TSN is reporting that that next year's NHL All-Star Game will be held here in Columbus, Ohio. Obviously, this is something the franchise has been pushing for a long time, and with the addition of some additional lodging being built downtown, I think they've been, you know, expecting that their turn would come up. So obviously, this is big news. Boys, what's your reaction to that? Matt, we'll start with you.
Oh, my first reaction is, wow, that's incredibly exciting. It's as weird and as bad as the season has been, I think that is a validation for the fan base and the love of hockey in Central Ohio, and a wonderful thank you and a reward from the NHL for
Mike,
the faith that the people of Columbus have shown.
Well, I think that the timing is perfect. You know, the team is at an all-time low. I mean, you know, it's everybody seems to be down in the dumps, whether it's fans or you know, media types, or even the ownership and everything. So this is a little bit of a silver lining to an otherwise terrible season. So it's some great news, and you know, now the team has to make sure that they have some legitimate all-stars that deserve to be at
I agree.
At next year's game in their home building.
With the way the season has gone, obviously a lot of the league considers to be kind of the laughing stock. And I do think, regardless of what the results look like next year, it's a good chance to show off what we all know, and that Columbus is a good hockey market. You know, anybody that was at the two playoff games, and I know it's disgusting to say the two playoff games, but anybody that was at those, especially game four, knows that that building can rock and it can be a force, and we all know what a gem the Arena District is. So for me, I'm just stoked. I just, like you guys, I hope that we've got maybe a few more wins than 13 by next year's All-Star break. So definitely big news. With that out of the way, let's get on with the podcast. I'm not going to insult everybody by talking about how awful the first half has been. We all lived it. We know how bad it was. So what we'll do is we'll get right to the stories of the day and look forward to the rest of the year and see what kind of ground we can cover here. So for both of you guys first, and Mike, we'll start with you. Obviously, the big story of today is that John P. McConnell has broken his silence, both by giving an interview to the guys at the Dispatch as well as sending an email blast out to the season ticket holders. So what I'm curious is, in your opinion, is this a case of too little too late from the majority owner of the club?
Well, I mean, there's never a good time for an owner to have to come out and basically apologize to the fan base for how much his team is you know, disappointing, or how disappointing his team is. But I mean, you can't really peg down what a good time is, you know, for someone to come out like that. So whether it's too little, too late, I mean, if you're doing this, as far as I'm concerned, if the owner feels like he has to, I mean, it's always going to be too late, because it means your team is in such a position that, you know, the fan base is obviously so upset. You know, you're obviously in a position where, you know, it's too late for most things anyway. So, I mean, it's great that he came out and, you know, reached out to the fans and the season ticket holders. But, I mean, it seems more obligatory than anything.
How about you, Matt? What do you think?
I don't think it's a case of too little too late, but I do think it's a case of enough but should have been sooner, if that makes any sense. Obviously, it's a no-brainer that people were frustrated. It's a no-brainer that I'm sure a lot of season ticket holders and just fans off the street feel like they're tired of throwing money at this and not having anything good come out of it. I'd argue that probably J.P. Mack feels very, very similarly to that, actually. But I do think that the time for him to make statements of confidence or even a statement of understanding should have come before people are planning protests, should have come before the Dispatch is running another headhunting expose. If he had come out a month, even 2 weeks ago, and said, "We realize that this is frustrating. I'm just as unhappy as everyone else, and things are going to change," I think a lot of the fan sentiment and a lot of the national media sentiment would be a lot calmer compared to what we're seeing right now.
Sticking with you, Matt, in the interview with the Dispatch, J.P. Mack noted that, you know, he kept talking about how they're either working on a continuing plan or they have a plan in place. And then obviously he was very tight-lipped about what that's going to look like. You know, he mentioned Craig Patrick, but we didn't hear a lot of mentions about Scott Housen. For me, the money quote was when he said, quoting, "We're going to get to a point very quickly where it's going to be obvious to people how extreme we're getting." Under the guise of the fact that maybe they haven't yet decided how extreme they want to get, what do you think they're going to end up doing in terms of strategy at the deadline? Are we looking at a full scale fire sale, or are we just going to maybe tweak by getting rid of, you know, the pending unrestricted guys and maybe try to add a piece?
Well, I certainly think it's going to be deeper than just moving UFAs. To say things like extreme and to say things in his letter or in his interview like the phrase nuclear option and the what I believe he said, "I'm slowly becoming more comfortable with the mentions of the nuclear option." That's not dump UFAs or dump RFAs. I think we're going to see maybe not a full-scale fire sale, but there could be a couple players that people thought were locked in absolute core pieces of the team that we may see move. I could certainly see ideas like Vermette. I could see the possibility of Umberger. Certainly Carter's already been mentioned. If I don't know if I'm in the Rick Nash is going to move club, but I have to admit if it happened, it would certainly say that a new sheriff's in town and that the team's turning a big page.
Okay, Mike, as Matt noted, the Dispatch, you know, reported on Sunday that Carter is definitely on the trade block. Obviously, there's some wrinkles there in that he has a no movement clause that kicks in after this season. In your opinion, would trading Carter be a good move at this point, so soon after acquiring him? And if they do, what do you actually think they could get in return for him?
Well, I think right off the bat, I mean, it would be a PR disaster. This team, you know, hasn't had that many high-profile players, you know, in its history. But all the players who have garnered, you know, a lot of attention seem to always leave the team on a bad note. Like, I think of Adam Foote, or even if you want to go back to Daryl Sador, who at the time was sort of a, you know, a big-name player, and he didn't last very long at all. So if Carter does get traded, you know, less than 1 year into, you know, his first season as a Blue Jacket, it would look so terribly, you know, to any free agent. You know, they would say, "Well, listen, what happened in Columbus? Why, you know, why couldn't Carter even last a season? There's obviously something wrong." So it would just, the optics of it would just be, you know, just a disaster. But that said, I mean, if we don't know if there's something going on with Carter, you know, in the locker room. I don't want to speculate or start any rumor or anything, but, you know, there was talk about how he was a bit frosty in the Philly room, so maybe he's brought some of that to the Columbus room. So maybe it would be better to get rid of the guy, but at the same time, you don't just dump a player. I'm a believer in hanging on to him for at least next season, see what's, you know, a fresh season can bring, see what kind of changes. And, you know, I'm firmly in the keep Nash and Carter camp. I'm not really you know, attached to any other player other than those two. But I think if you've got two stars in house, you may as well take advantage of that. If he was dealt, the team isn't going to, you know, get a first and a third and a player like Voracek back. It's just not going to happen. I would say a first round pick is always going to be in play for a player of his caliber. So you can see a first rounder coming back, maybe a mid round pick just as a sweetener and a young player, but it's certainly not going to be a player on the same level as Voracek was. So I would say almost any return that Columbus could get for Carter would be disappointing, just given what the team paid for him. But again, it's going to be interesting to see if he's dealt or not. But
Matt, did you want to add anything about Carter possibly getting traded?
Well, I think the biggest thing to point out, I agree that it doesn't look good. I do agree. But on the other hand, I have to wonder if at some point we have to look at Jeff. If Jeff Carter is moved and if Jeff Carter is kind of causing a problem in the locker room or causing a problem where the team feels that moving him is the best option, I do almost wonder if some of that blame has to go on Jeff Carter. It can't just be Columbus in that case, because we saw how he reacted to being traded out of Philly. We saw, you know, kind of the code of silence that he handled a lot of the season with, regardless of injury. There's a part of me that says, absolutely, Columbus looks bad because of this, and there are things that I think the franchise will get some egg on their face. But there's also a question of how professionally did Jeff Carter handle this, and does he share some responsibility?
Mike, in your mind, if we can sort of shift gears a little bit, obviously when your team has 13 wins in 49 games, it's the entire thing is disappointing. But when you look at individual parts of the team, you know, if you want to look at like the blue line or the goal or goaltending or offense or even the coaching, for you, what was the biggest disappointment so far through these first 49 games?
Well, I mean, when your team has a record like this, it's obviously more than one area of the team. But I mean, you got to look at goaltending. Steve Mason has just not even been relevant this season. It's almost pathetic to think that, you know, he was such a promising goaltender, and just what he's playing, the level he's playing at, and it's just a shame. So I say goaltending is obviously the biggest issue. In terms of, you know, fixing this problem, I mean, if you take a look at some of the free agent goaltenders, I mean, it's a bit of a mess. You know, there's not a lot of quality options out there. I mean, even if you had the money, right? A couple names, though. I mean, you know, the Monster in Toronto, he's a free agent if he's not going to be, you know, re-signed by the Leafs because he's been playing so well lately. But he's currently a UFA. You know, you got Josh Harding in Minnesota. He's another great option, you know, young goaltender with the ability to probably start. Now, you know, there's always the usual suspects when you're talking trade, like the Schneiders, the Berniers. But recently, Pierre LeBrun, on an ESPN article, he mentioned that the Blues might be interested in dealing Ben Bishop, who's their number three goalie right now. And he mentioned something along the lines of the fact that many, you know, professional, like prognosticators, scouts, what have you, they believe the Bishop's, you know, one of the best goalies who's not playing in the NHL, if not the best goalie not in the NHL right now. So that would be an interesting target, I think, you know, in terms of a trade. But again, that's going for a young player who isn't proven, you know. But I think what the team needs to do is somehow find a way to acquire a veteran goaltender with experience. And I mean, easier said than done, but whether or not that can happen this summer is questionable. But regardless, goaltending is a big issue. As for the you know, the current situation, I think everybody and their dog knows that Steve Mason's not going to be with the team next year. Curtis Sanford has played well, but you know, when you get excited over, you know, Sanford's record being what it is and his play, I mean, that should be just standard. That should be the minimum amount, you know, statistically that you'd want from a goaltender. So it's great that the Stanford's having a great year, but relatively speaking, you know, he's having an average year. I think it'd be interesting to see him back next season as a backup, but certainly the team needs to acquire a legitimate goaltender. But, you know, that's easier said than done.
Matt, assuming the club does decide to go full-scale blow-up at the deadline, in your opinion, who on the roster is safe? And you touched on this earlier, but does Rick Nash get traded?
That's the million-dollar question, if you pardon the joke. But Where I sit, I don't think the club is in a hurry to move Nash. I think it would take a really knock-your-socks-off offer. For example, let's say one of those names that Mike just mentioned, Jonathan Bernier or Corey Schneider being involved in that. You know, some kind of return like that. You know, something ridiculous would have to come back to move him. That said, a lot of just about everybody else you have to think can't feel too comfortable. I think the guys that probably are quote unquote safe, your Ryan Johansson's, your Cam Atkinson's, your Thomas Kubalik's, the David Savard's, that prospect core that seems to be really showing some promise in Springfield, showing some promise when they've gotten a chance to play in the NHL a little bit here. They're the guys I think the club is going to guard against trade offers. Players currently on the roster, a lot of that room is probably up for grabs right now.
Well, a question for both of you guys, and Matt, we'll start with you. You stated that there may be a lot of people on the trading block. So who is a guy that's on that trading block that you think might be considered a mistake to get rid of at this point?
The first guy that comes to mind, and unfortunately I think it's almost a given that he will leave, is Vinny Prospel. Vinny is a guy who has the characteristics that fans have loved because of his passion, because of his energy, because of the fact that he's going out there and just delivering every night, even when it's obvious that he's not having a good night physically or that the rest of the team has kind of packed it in around him. The fact that he's had the confidence and the honesty to call out this team publicly, in the press, in in-game interviews, whenever, if he thinks people aren't competing hard enough, if he thinks they aren't practicing right, if he doesn't like what he sees on the ice, he tells somebody. And I'm sure that he's giving it to his teammates twice as hard as he's saying anything publicly. That kind of accountability and that kind of veteran leadership is something that I think the team could really, really use for the next couple seasons. And unfortunately, I suspect it's going to end up being a situation where I don't know whether he'll want to stay. And I suspect the team will, if they wanted to keep them, will get offers.
Mike, what about you?
To refuse.
I'm with Matt 100% on Vinny. I mean, it's almost a shame that, you know, things are going to have to, you know, work out like they're going to almost inevitably. But another name I want to throw out there, you know, Derek Brassard. I mean, earlier this season, obviously, Brass was in Arneil's doghouse or whatever the situation was. But he's been playing very well of late. And something that I've been keying on while watching games recently is what he does, obviously, without the puck. Because we all know what he can do with it. And what you're seeing is you're seeing the back checking. You're seeing him not float around his own blue line and, you know, waiting for that pass. He's getting involved. Maybe there's some room for improvement in those areas, but I can see there is signs of improvement already. He's young. He's talented. I mean, his contract isn't so unreasonable that he's an anchor, you know, if he is kept on the roster. And I think, you know, he's really changed my mind. Earlier this season, I was promoting a trade. You know, not that I ever like to see a guy leave, but you know, I think I'd really like to see him stick around and be one of the two scoring line centers, you know, here on the team. So he's really impressed me of late, but I think, you know, he's a player who would look quite valuable to a team looking for, you know, depth up the middle. So if the Jackets get, you know, a deal that they can't refuse, then they're going to have to make that deal, you know, from a business perspective. But I think just the way he's played lately, I think Brass would be a player I'd like to hang
on
to.
Okay, let's shift gears for a moment and go behind the bench. Obviously, with Scott Arneil having been fired and at this point not given any other role within the organization, Todd Richards has ascended to the interim coach spot. And this is, you know, something that a lot of us, you know, thought at the beginning of the year. If things go sideways, you know, you have Todd Richards kind of waiting in the wings. And it's some respects that the team, you know, enjoys playing for him a little bit more, even though, you know, having a break, the results are not really bearing that out. So, Mike, do you see the final 33 games for Richards as an on-the-job interview, or do you think that no matter what happens, that the front office is going to look for a new coach?
Well, I mean, you always have to consider him. I mean, he's got half a season to work with, or a little better than half a season to work with. And I mean, he's got experience as a head coach. I mean, it was, you know, a brief stint in Minnesota, but I mean, you can't keep you know, firing coaches, hiring coaches. I mean, it already looks terrible, the amount of coaches that, you know, Columbus has gone through. But, I mean, Richards seems to be, you know, showing the ability to change the sort of psyche of the players. They seem to be playing differently, more energized. So, and then, I mean, I think back to recently that game, you know, what they came out, you know, down 2-0 in the first period, and they came out just, you know, like a team on fire, like a team possessed, you know. So whatever he did in the locker room in that first intermission, you know, obviously it worked, and the players identified with him. So he's obviously doing something right so far. But at the end of the day, I mean, at the end of the season, if the team has just been, you know, pathetic in the second half and not even bringing it whatsoever, you have to look maybe, you know, at hiring a new coach. But, I mean, it's a difficult situation for Richards because – I mean, the team's already playing out the string, and it's only midway through the season. So it's not an ideal situation to be, you know, doing an on-the-job interview. But at the same time, he's got to be considered. And I think he's got as good a chance as any, you know, prospective coach. So
okay. Well, now we'll kind of shift forward, assuming that there are big changes coming at the trading deadline. Matt, I'll ask you, who are some of the players you're looking forward to seeing come up from Springfield, in many cases come back from Springfield, once the dust from the trading deadline settles out?
Biggest one I'm looking forward to is Cam Atkinson, no question. He obviously had a rough start in the NHL here after training camp, but he was getting on the board there. He's shown a lot of hustle. He went down to Springfield, and he's been leading the club in scoring. I think we're obviously seeing somebody who's ready. I'm hoping that the more we see him play, I think the biggest thing is just getting him used to the physical nature of the NHL. And once we have that, I think he's going to be in business. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does at the big club on a more
very good basis. Mike, are there any players that you're looking forward to seeing?
Well, I mean, Atkinson's obvious. I'd like to see Calvert back. I mean, he was an important, I wouldn't say big, but an important part of the team last year. And, you know, he's obviously been working hard as Lou, you know, updates us. And, you know, he's been giving good reports on Calvert, you know, most of the time. So I'd like to see him up, you know, see what he's got, you know, in terms of his second chance. And I mean, he's probably going to max out as a bottom six player in the NHL, but, you know, he's got that extra little scoring ability. So I'm intrigued by what Calvert can do now that he spent most of the season down the AHL. So he along with Atkinson are the
very
two
good
guys I'm interested in seeing.
Well, we've kind of come to the end of the questions. There's one more, obviously, you know, looking forward to the rest of the season. I'll ask both of you. Matt, I'll start with you. What realistic expectations are there for the rest of the season? I mean, obviously, you know, unless they go on a Devils type run from last season, they're going to be at or near the bottom of the league the rest of the way. You know, are you looking for, you know, maybe string some wins together, climb up a few spots, you know, 12th, 13th in the conference? Are you looking for a full on tank job, you know, the full on fail for nail? Or is it somewhere in between where maybe they're playing well enough to win here and there, but at the same time, they're not, you know, not completely killing that lottery pick?
I honestly, at this point, I have a hard time seeing this team losing out on a lottery pick. I think we're kind of at the point where we are what we are. We're going to be seeing a lot of this. If I had a hope, I would like to see the games be a little more fun, be a little more competitive. The loss to Detroit in the shootout, you know, admittedly, it was a loss. It did get to shootout, but it was a loss, but it was a fun game. It was, you know, aside from Nikitin getting hurt, obviously, but it was an entertaining, energetic game, and you got the sense that the team really, they knew they were going into a bad spot, but they at least were putting their best effort out there. If we could get more of that and see more games like that where at least the team puts on a good try and the fans have a good time watching the game, I'm okay with that. You know, I think pretty much everybody has accepted that the price of this season or the reward of this season is that things are going to stink for the next 30-some games, and then when we get to the end, we're going to get a really high draft pick and hopefully get, you know, if it's Nail Yakupov, if it's Mikhail Goryenko, if it's Doug Murray, if it's somebody else who suddenly blows up at the combine and comes out of the water to separate from the pack, whatever. The payoff is going to be at the draft.
Mike, what about you? What are your expectations and or prognostications?
Well, I mean, if the team is playing at the level it's at now and we're expecting to lose a lot of veteran players or even some veteran players at the deadline, I can't see things improving. The team is in line for a high pick. You hear the old cliche, like the players will always play to win. And I mean, that is true. You'd like to think that. And that is likely the scenario. So the players are going to compete. And as Matt says, you want the entertainment value. If you know that you're already not doomed to lose, I hate to be that dramatic, but if you already know that you're in tough to come out with a victory, at least you want it to be entertaining. This year's draft is as good a draft as any to have a high pick. Yakupov is, yes, he's Russian. We've had our issues with Russians, but the difference being Yakupov is already in North America and committed, whereas Zhertov and Filatov, they were still in Russia before they made the move over. So Yakupov's here now. He's committed, and he's a legitimate talent. So he's more than likely going to go first overall. And the team Columbus would be, in really good shape if they can add him. Grigorenko, another solid Russian. I've seen him play firsthand here in Halifax. And he's not on the same level as Yakupov skill-wise, but he's a little bit more physical. He's a little bit of a different player all around, but he's another great player. Personally, I put more stock into draft for need than most. I'm not saying I'm one or the other, draft for need or draft best player available, but I like to think that if you have an obvious need, why not go for it? So this team, the Columbus Blue Jackets organization top to bottom, is light on high-end defensemen, and there's a lot of them this year in this draft. There's a lot of really high-end defensemen. So I can sort of see two scenarios playing out. If the team continues to be as bad as they are now and is a lottery pick, picking first or second, you have to take Yakupov first overall. Second overall, I think you've got some decisions to make. Grigorenko is a great player, but then you've got players like Ryan Murray with Everett Silvertips. I mean, he's all-around steady defenseman. He's not going to get a ton of points, but he's just a great all-around player. Matt Dumba, another WHL defenseman, he's more of an offensive type. Be a great addition to the team and something that the team lacks right now. So I think you're going to see some interesting things happen in June at the draft. Another option, I mean, if the team can get some first-round picks, at the deadline for some of the veterans, I mean, it'll be difficult to do. But if the team can somehow add some first-rounders, maybe some minor pick trades at the draft can take place and the team can maybe stock up, a la the Florida Panthers last couple seasons and basically – build through the draft, stock up on picks, and supplement with some free agents. So that's sort of what I'm hoping for towards the end of the season, towards the early offseason. But either way, I think if the team can get Yakupov, that would be the best
possible scenario.
I tend
to be in that boat. I've long said that I'd like to see competitive hockey, but don't go out of your way to let Edmonton pick number one for the third year in a row. So we'll wrap it up for now. We'll do our best, a little more active on the podcast front, especially since there will no doubt be some big changes coming. We'll sign off for now. Thanks again to Matt Wagner and to Mike McLean, and we will talk to you all again soon.
This has been another edition of The Cannon Blue Jackets Roundtable. Thanks for listening.